Courtside Conversations.
Courtside Conversations.
The Roland Garros Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Courtside Conversations, the official Roland Garros podcast. My name is Gigi Salmon, and together with special guests, we are going to be keeping you company throughout the year. We like to call it tennis with a French twist. The second Grand Slam of the year, never too far from our thoughts, and now just a matter of weeks away. And with that in mind, I am delighted to say that with me today, former world number one, two-time Grand Slam champion, and Roland Garros tournament director, Amélie Mauresmo. Amélie, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
And thank you so much for taking the time, especially with Roland Garros just around the corner. Yeah. So I imagine your days are pretty busy.
Yeah, it's busy, but it's exciting. It's me and the teams, we are really looking forward, to getting to the event, actually, because the preparation is there, it's going well. But now it's just in a few weeks we will be we'll jump right into the tournament. So we're very impatient, actually.
And I want to get to this year's tournament, but I'm going to start with, well, this is a pretty big question. But what does Roland Garros mean to you? Because you've got a really long history with the venue and with the tournament.
Exactly. I think for me, the venue and the tournaments are part of my history, part of my life. I went to Roland Garros for the first time when I was 9 years old. I think it was at that moment we had the best players in France were having like a stage, we would all be together from all around France and meeting at Roland Garros. And it was at the time the National Tennis Center was also in the stadium in Roland Garros. Now it's moved away to allow the tournament to have more space. But from then I was going there basically a couple times per year until I actually lived there when I was, I think it was 15. I started to live in Roland Garros when I was 15. So all the bad things that you can do at that age, I did in Roland Garros.
So you trained here, you won the Roland Garros junior title. I really like the way you have been quoted as calling Roland Garros your playground.
Yes, it has been my playground in many ways. Tennis-wise, obviously, with practicing, spending so many hours practicing there, with the junior title, with all the stories, that we were young and we were living there and we were having such a great life between practices and it was good memories. And obviously, and then growing up, seeing the tournament in a different way. Roland Garros also for me is why I started playing tennis, because when Yannick won the tournament in 83, I was actually watching, my mom was watching, so I was there 4 years old watching. And so Roland Garros is really at the beginning of my tennis history, of my tennis life. And it was when the president, when Gilles asked me to, if I wanted to be at the head of the tournament, I was, I was so so happy, so proud, and it kind of meant something to me deeper than just the tennis career, the basic tennis career, and being ahead of a Grand Slam of Roland Garros is nice, but it meant much more to me than this.
It's an absolutely incredible journey that you've had with the tournament, you continue to have. What was that transition like? I'm going to talk about from player and coach to tournament director, but from a junior player to a senior player at Roland Garros, because we always talk about the pressure of a player at their home Grand Slam. But I remember coming to Paris, your picture was everywhere. It was all everyone was talking about. I mean, how tough is that for a player?
It was tough. And I have to say, and like everyone could see, I could not really handle this pressure pretty well. I tried every year to, try to prepare differently, try to work mentally differently, try to, be out of the city for as long as I could and then just come for the matches. I used to also try to live really close to the stadium to try to be in this atmosphere most of the time. So I was really looking for some ways to handle that pressure, whether it was mentally, whether it was physically, whether it was just the people around me. And yeah, it never really came out the right way for me in Paris, because my kind of worst Grand Slam in terms of results as a senior player. So it's huge. I mean, it's huge. You ask Andy in Wimbledon, it's pretty big. But you know, it's pressure is also a privilege. So you have to know that when you are under this pressure, it means you're doing well. It means you're a great player. It means you're a big champion, and that you have the ability to go to the end of these tournaments. So it was a challenge every year for me, definitely.
That frustration at the results that weren't coming at Roland Garros, did that increase your drive elsewhere? Because I think one of the stats for me is phenomenal. Your first Grand Slam title, so Australian Open 2006, that was 7 years after your first yes. Grand Slam final. I mean, that's another part of this incredible journey.
Mm. It was long. It was very, very long. I think I had to wait quite a long time. It took patience, perseverance, and I knew I could do it. I mean, the fire was inside of me each time more. I cannot say that when things were not going well in Roland Garros, the drive was getting bigger for the other ones. I don't feel that way. But definitely I would leave Roland Garros and obviously go to the grass court season and to Wimbledon in much a lighter perspective, lighter pressure, and I did my best results there. So it's maybe apart from the game that my game was suiting the grass really well. Apart from that, maybe it was also because the pressure all of a sudden, boom, was going down and it was much better for me to handle.
And did it feel a little bit of a release winning the title in Australia late that year? You'd win Wimbledon. I had a little look back at some of that final last night, and the moment when you won it and you're back to world number one, it just felt maybe Roland Garros aside, just everything coming together.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the game was there, the mental was there. The level, definitely, I felt at the time I had won the year-end championship a couple of months before. So I think I was dominating the game at that time, and it showed in terms of ranking, because I reached the number one again. So yeah, this year between the end of 2005 and the end of 2006 was quite extraordinary, and everything was definitely coming together at that moment.
Do you have one memory from your playing career that stands out among the rest? And we haven't even got to talking about your success in the Olympics, with the Olympics in Paris this year.
For me, the image that comes first is the win in Wimbledon. It's definitely something that is that was really, really important to me. But winning a medal for my country in the Olympics was something that I didn't think would be so incredible in terms of emotions and feelings. I knew I wanted it, but I didn't anticipate the emotion that it would give me. Definitely. And also one other thing, apart from being number one in the world, is winning the Fed Cup at the time with France. That was also, I love to play in team sports. I love to play team sports. And I was so happy actually to be able to win this with the girls, with the team, with all the people around us. That was something special as well.
Yeah, very special moments and memories. Now, we are well and truly underway with the clay. We're getting closer to Roland Garros. So first thing, you talked about growing up on the clay, you won the Roland Garros junior title, but had a game suited to grass. So how did you find that transition from the hard courts to the clay courts?
To be honest, my game was also suiting clay pretty well. I never did that as well as I would want in Roland Garros, but winning Rome a couple of times, playing many finals there, winning Berlin at the time a few times as well. Berlin was quite the equivalent of Madrid now. So the two biggest tournaments leading up to the Grand Slam, I won a few times and I was always playing well there. So my game was also with the top spin on both sides and everything, and physical abilities. I was also able to play well on the surface. So it took usually a couple of weeks to really feel good, you know, the sliding, the length of the rallies, the tactical part. I think everything was kind of coming together in 2-3 weeks, let's say. Yeah, 2 weeks of maybe practice and then two couple tournaments, and then I would feel okay. But it's tough because, yeah, it's not like the clay court season is getting shorter, but yeah, it can be short, and it's important for us in Roland Garros to know that you have some clay court tournaments before, you know, big ones, important ones, also small ones, for everyone to be able to play and to make sure that every player coming in Paris, coming in Roland Garros, you know, is ready to compete best of three, best of five, and on that surface, which is extremely demanding.
It certainly is. And it feels that for those that haven't been brought up on the clay, it's also a mental battle, because some players seem to tell themselves mentally from the outset, I can't play on the surface.
Yeah, it's also mental. And I think throughout a career, when you haven't been really raised on clay or started to play quite early on this on clay, it takes time mentally also, you are right. And I'm thinking the first person I'm thinking about right now is Daniil Medvedev. And I think as his career is progressing, I feel and I see, and we can all see that he starts to believe in himself also on the clay courts. And yes, it takes a little bit more time, but I think you have some specificities, definitely. But if you don't believe, then you're not going to be able to do anything on that surface, that's for sure.
And do you have to be willing to make changes to your game? You mentioned Daniil Medvedev. Another player that comes to mind is Naomi Osaka, who's back on tour. I watched her recently, and it feels a sort of resistance to make the changes from a game that works so well on the hard courts to coming onto the clay.
It's difficult because you have to know how to do those things in on regular basis on and you have to be willing. Not only do you have to be willing to do it, you have to, you know, technically it's not easy to just go playing most of the time quite flat, not fully flat, but quite flat, and then all of a sudden put more spin on both sides and everything, have longer rallies. Also, you physically, you have to have the ability to do that and to hang in there a little bit longer and fight a little bit more for the points. So it's a little bit of everything. And I think actually on the woman's side, yes, it can be specific, but we've also seen some girls winning Roland Garros not having to change that much their game. So I'm thinking about Maria, the first one I'm thinking about. And she felt terrible on clay at the beginning of her career. And she said, I don't know how to move on that surface and everything. And then she found a way, but with her own identity, I would say. So it's not that drastical change that you have to do, I feel, on the woman's side. Of course, when you see Iga playing naturally and moving naturally on clay and having the game that adapts really well, then it shows that if you can adapt, it's a big plus, definitely. But I think you can still do pretty well if you adapt just a little bit.
Yeah, you adapt and you have that belief. And we're going to talk about some of the players coming to Paris for Roland Garros. But before that, you mentioned it a while back when you were asked to take up the role of tournament director at Roland Garros, the first ever tournament director of the tournament. It was December 2021. Did you have to think very long before you gave them an answer, or was it an immediate yes?
Well, not an immediate. I had to think about it, definitely. But after I asked a couple of questions that were important to me in terms of, the questions I was asking were pretty simple. I'm not into politics. I don't like that. I don't want to be. So I was saying, okay, I'm guessing this role is kind of a political thing also, and I just want to make sure that with me it's not going to happen, actually. I want... So it's that was one answer that was suiting the way I was seeing things. And also having the ability to make the tournament evolve, really, like not only being the face of the tournament just to show me around saying, oh, she's the new tournament director, but actually to be able to make some deep changes in the tournament. And that was also an answer that I liked. So starting from there, I thought, well, I can have fun doing this, and I know the place, I know the tournament in many different ways, not only as a player, as a coach, as a captain, as a commentator, as a spectator, as a TV spectator. So it was interesting for me to see what I could do, knowing all those aspects of the tournament, how I could do as a tournament director. And I took, to be honest, it took me, so you mentioned December 21, it took me until the end of the 22 edition of Roland Garros to know exactly. I learned everything before the tournament, but I have to leave this first edition as a tournament director to know exactly where I wanted to go, what I wanted to change, where I wanted the tournament to evolve, or towards what I wanted the tournament to evolve. So it was really interesting and intense 6-7 months to get there.
I imagine a big part of the job is listening, because you spoke about all the experience and all the areas, but it's listening to the players, listening to the people at the federation, listening to the media, listening to the spectators, and trying to, I imagine it's not possible, but trying to keep everybody happy.
Yeah, you can. I mean, it's, yeah, big part of the job is this, for sure, in terms of everyone you said, every population that you said, whether starting from the players, obviously, but also listening to the spectators, to the, you know, TV, journalists, people that come in the stadium and they give you some feedback. Everyone's giving you some feedback. So it's you cannot make everyone happy on the same things at the same time. So you just try to, you know, being convinced about things that I don't want to move for the tournament, or things I definitely want to move. So, and also putting sport in priority. My goal as a tournament director is, yes, to make the tournament very interesting, apart from the sports side, for spectators. They're happy to come, for people on TV, they're happy to watch, for players to come, they you know, we take care of them really well and everything. But also to make sure that sport comes first. And that's what I'm trying to do. And this is also, you know, on daily basis during the tournament, and also throughout the year, to make decisions that are, really taking into consideration the sports side of this event, because it's a sport event, basically.
No, it is. And when the spectators come this year, they're going to see a lot of tennis. But what can they expect? What is Roland Garros 2024 going to give to the spectators?
First of all, I really wanted, the first thing I did when I arrived is I wanted a 3 weeks event, and I wanted this qualies week, this opening week, as we call it now, to be open, to be that people could come to watch not only the qualies, not only those players between, let's say, 100 and 250, but also to be able to have fun, to watch the practice from the players from the main draw, you know, as they come throughout this previous week of main draw, this qualification week. So this is something that first year we opened half of the venue, and then last year we opened all the venue, but we had 10,000 people max per day. And this year we open all the venue and we have 15,000 people max per day with in the stadium, in the alleys and everything, some things happening. Not only tennis, you see many other things and also during the 2 weeks of the main. So accessibility with a low price. So accessibility was for me something important, because we hear for years, for decades maybe, you know, people that are watching tennis, they're getting older. You have to have the young people to come, but So young people, they cannot come if it's too expensive also. So we invite a lot of, we do a lot of association that are coming to watch. It was important for me and the whole team to make sure that people every age could watch tennis, could live their Roland Garros the way they wanted. And we did it, and we do it. And that 2024, I think, is going to be even bigger on this aspect. We have the night sessions that are really starting to be, you know, to be a rendezvous, kind of, you know. It's more of a Parisian. I mean, people in the day, they come from all France and around the world. But definitely these night sessions, they are more Parisians style. They go to a spectacle, they go to a theater. Well, they come to Roland Garros to see the night sessions, and the atmosphere is quite different as well, as we can see in New York or in Melbourne. So this also was something of a challenge for us to make sure that people, that these night sessions find their crowd. And I think it has.
Yeah, and the good thing with French culture is that when the night sessions finish, I'm thinking from a media point of view, we can still find a lovely restaurant nearby to have
yes.
some food. So it works perfectly.
Always, always. We'll always find this in Paris. No worries.
That is very important. Now, before we started the podcast, chatting with a few people about the weather, and they said, "What's the weather like here?" And I said, I'm just outside London. I was like, "It's raining." And I was like, "How is France?" They're like, "It's kind of cold and a little bit rainy."
Yeah.
But the good news is, if this weather does continue, we will have two courts with two roofs.
Exactly. So this is in 2024, with joint effort from the Federation and the Olympics, we have the roof over the Suzanne Lenglen as well, which is for us definitely going to make our life a little bit easier if the rain comes in. It's not going to fix everything if it's on the first week, but yes, we are very happy about it. And it's, I mean, hopefully we don't have to use it, because we know that Roland Garros is so much better when it's a good weather and it's hot, but we have this, this possibility. And also talking about the Suzanne Lenglen, we're going to put it to play for the qualies. So during the opening week, it's going to be a court that is going to have matches on. I told you we're going to have 15,000 people per day. It's almost sold out already. And so, yeah, we want to give them some matches on Suzanne Lenglen as well.
And something else that stood out for me new this year is the junior wheelchair event. It's a competition, wheelchair tennis, I've worked on a lot through Paralympics and through Grand Slams, but so good to see the sport is growing, and so great to see that Roland Garros is introducing a junior event.
It was obvious for us that we would go through down this road, because it's how do you say, it's first of all, it's the policy of the Federation to you know, not only help the wheelchair adults, but now they're also going to have a program for the juniors, for the younger ones. And then we start small draws, definitely for girls, for boys, but we're going to make sure that this event is growing. I mean, our venue is not, we don't have that many courts. I mean, compared to the other slams, it's we kind of also, on that last week of the tournament, we still have a lot of matches, like with the legends, with the juniors, with the wheelchairs, everything. So, yeah, it's kind of tricky sometimes to put, you know, to have all the competitions to be played, but it was important. So it's the first step. We're very proud about it. We keep on the adults part, we're going to put finals or semifinals on Friday and Saturday on the Philippe Chatrier as well. So this also gives them such a nice exposure, and it's covered with French TV as well. So yeah, we continue to have also this wheel, actually, just to open the tournament.
And I was just thinking, if it does rain, somewhere for the spectators to go is the tennis museum, because it's back open.
Yeah, it's back open. It's you're going to have shops and all the things in there, but it's also an auditorium. So for the partners, for people that want to have like big meetings and everything, 350 seats. So it's also a new space to discover. And we were in work for a few years in this place, in this area. So it's also something new that we're going to be able to use during the tournament. But yeah, mostly the fact if it rains, when it rains, that we're going to have 25,000 people on both Châtrier and Langland already covered. you know, that's big for us. And also two courts that are playing for TV as well. That's also big.
Yeah, no, that it is so important because the weather is so unpredictable. I need to talk to you about some of the players we're hoping to see. The first one is the 14-time champion, Rafa Nadal. We saw him return in Barcelona, having not played since Brisbane. We know for him this year is massive. There's Roland Garros. There's the Olympics played at Roland Garros. I mean, Emily, it is utterly remarkable what he has achieved in tennis and what he has achieved at Roland Garros.
Yeah, it's. I always say it could be the biggest, performance in all sports of all time. Winning 14 times Roland Garros is huge. I mean, can we say that it's never going to be done again? I mean, is it? I mean, probably when Borg was winning so many Roland Garros, maybe people would think that it could never be done again. But this time, I mean, 14 times, I don't see that happen ever again. I mean, I'm not going to be there maybe to see it if it happens one day, because it's huge. And not only he won those 14 times in Roland Garros, he was able to adapt. We were talking about adapting earlier to clay. Well, he was able to adapt to grass, to hard courts, to surfaces when he was starting his career that were not really suiting his game and his style of play. And the fact that he was able to actually make this evolution in his game is huge. I mean, it tells you how big of a champion he is as well. We want to see him in Roland Garros.
100%. But as a tournament director, do you have conversations with players or agents? So are you, I don't know, messaging Nadal saying, take care, be okay, wrap yourself up, make sure you get to Paris in one piece?
Well, first of all, I don't think I have to message him for him to do that. I am personally in contact. We are all the team also in contact with him, with his team. So, you know, we follow. It's kind of, we also don't want, I personally don't want to put pressure. I mean, as a player, I wouldn't want the tournament directors to kind of harass me and saying, are you okay? Take care. You're going to come and everything. So I know him, we know him, we know he does his best, and he says that Roland Garros is definitely the most important tournament of the year for him. So no doubt that he will do whatever it takes and whatever he can do to just try to be there. And if he's not, then it means really it was not possible, because I know that he would do everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we have Novak Djokovic, who as we speak has pulled out of Madrid. We expect him back in Rome. He's the defending champion. He's had changes recently, separating from Goran Ivanisevic. Nenad Zimonjic has come in, but also quite extraordinary what he continues to do at his age and at the level he's playing at.
Definitely very impressive as well. I mean, he has the record now, and it looks like even though he hasn't played well or that well since the beginning of the year, he looks like he can still going, so he can keep going, and we are still counting. So yes, it's a period of time for him that is a little bit more shaky, maybe. I'm not that surprised that he's not going to Madrid, given the altitude and the conditions of play there, and that he wants to focus on Rome before coming to Paris. So this also is not, probably he felt in Monaco that he had enough, he knows where he stands, he knows where he is, and he knows what he needs to do next to be able to perform at his best in Paris. So yeah, I think after splitting with longtime coach Goran, it takes a little bit of time, but he knows himself so well. I mean, what he's able to do mentally especially mentally, of course, physically, and the way he plays tennis, it's remarkable, it's incredible. But mentally, it's the pressure he's been under the last few years to, you know, to go in front of Rafa, first of all, in front of Roger, then in front of Rafa, was huge, huge. And I really admire him for that as well.
I think it was interesting, a couple of years ago, everyone was saying, what will happen when the big three, the big four retire? What will happen to tennis? Who's coming up? And now I feel like we're spoilt for choice. We have those players who've been around for a few years, and then Carlos Alcaraz and what he's already done, and Jannik Sinner, the man to beat in 2024, and how he has elevated his game.
We are lucky, definitely. as tennis lovers, we are very lucky. And yes, those young guys, they really came up strong, because you had to be quite impressive to start beating those big three, big four guys, to start to believe that you can actually, you know, win those Grand Slams, make history, and kind of push them out at some point. So, they believe in themselves. They know it's possible, and this is the beginning. And then the way they play tennis, the way they move, the athletes that they are, the intelligence that they have on the court tactically, very impressive.
And from a French point of view, pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. 10 Frenchmen, if we're just dealing with the ATP at the moment, into the main draw. And Hugo Humbert, 2 titles, playing some great tennis with Jeremy Chardy in his corners. So, and Gael Monfils,
he's back.
He's back and he's still going and he's still playing great tennis.
He still plays some great tennis. I mean, Gael, when he's fit, he can really, he's incredible. And Hugo, I'm happy to see him. You know, he's not an exuberant guy. He's more shy, definitely, but he's working hard. I'm happy for Jeremy as well that things are going well, because I like him a lot also. But it's on the men's side with Arthur Fils as well, Lucas Van Aert, the young ones also showing up strong since a year or so. It's really good for us. I definitely hope on the women's side that Caroline can show her how great she can be on clay as well. I hope that she can show that in Roland Garros. And also, you know, we have like Diane Paris and Clara Burel. We have some good players that can show up.
And on the women's side, you mentioned her earlier, Iga Świątek. And I think the thing for me, I have to keep reminding myself, it's her birthday next month, but she is currently 22 years old, is in her 100th week as world number one, and she's already a 4-time Grand Slam champion.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's incredible as well. I mean, the way she handles, first of all, I was talking about how she plays on clay and how she's able to play in Roland Garros, not only her game, but the pressure she's now starts to face in when she gets to Roland Garros, and how she handles that is shows that she can have much more. She has 4 Grand Slams, 3 Roland Garros, and definitely I don't see her stopping anytime soon. So, I mean, winning those Grand Slams. So she is already a huge champion of the game, but who knows where she can go and where she will be when she wants to stop playing tennis. And I love seeing her play on in Roland Garros, on clay definitely, but in Roland Garros as well, because she looks like she has a special state of mind there. And she's impressive, and she's gonna, you know, she's coming as a favorite also once again this year.
We talk about different styles on the clay. It's fascinating. Is Elena Rybakina just won Stuttgart, the 500 level tournament?
Yeah.
And she's one of very few players that is able to hit through Iga Świątek on the clay.
Yeah. It's Stuttgart is also, it's indoors, so it's conditions a little bit different. It's definitely going faster, and the style of play that Elena is playing, it can definitely work depending on the conditions as well. If it's hot in Paris, if the clay is a little bit dry, if, you know, although Iga's topspin is also going to jump a little higher and everything, but But yeah, different. You have different styles of play that can express themselves definitely on clay, given the conditions.
And you can throw in, we've got Aryna Sabalenka, that the powerful hitter, but then you've got Ons Jabeur and the trickery that she brings to the court.
Yeah, it's also, I love women's tennis now as well because you have different type of players. I'm thinking, you mentioned Ons, which is playing a different game than the others. Iga, also different. Aryna with the power. Coco Gauff, a little bit of everything, mixture, a little bit of everything. I'm thinking Sloane Stephens as well, very, very easy on clay, sliding well, putting some top spins. It's very interesting. And again, all those kind of styles of play can express themselves on clay as well. So you're definitely looking forward to see how it's gonna be in Paris.
And the other thing that stood out for me, we have 13 active mothers on tour. We've got five in the top 100. I just about juggle motherhood and work. I don't know how they do it, to be juggling being a mother and getting to themselves at such a level to perform on this stage.
Well, I agree with you. I don't know how they do it, and I cannot. Really a big applause to them, because I think it's very challenging. And because to be an athlete, to be a professional athlete, you have to be very selfish, to think about yourself all the time, your recovery, what you eat, how much you sleep, how long you spend on the court, in the gym, getting massage, stretching, blah, blah, blah. And then to have a family life, to have kids and have time for them and have energy for them and make sure that they are well and that they are happy. Is quite a challenge. So, you know, even though I'm pretty sure they have good setup around them and people around them to also take over when it's needed, it's still mentally something that you have in mind and that it's just there all the time. So it's it's actually a mystery to me how they do it.
Yeah, I genuinely don't know how they do it. It's phenomenal. And finally, while I have you, you mentioned one of the proudest moments was winning an Olympic medal. It was in Athens for your country.
Yeah.
It's in Paris. It's at Roland Garros. I'm assuming Roland Garros looks slightly different, but will you be able to enjoy the event as a spectator, or are they linked together?
If I'm in Paris, you know, at that moment, I'm going to watch. Definitely, I try to come to Roland Garros and watch, because I don't have anything to do with the event professionally. But I will definitely try to go and see other sports as well, to be honest.
Amélie, considering that we are so close to Roland Garros, can I just say thank you so much for taking the time to being on the podcast today?
It was a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for being with us. I look forward to seeing you in Paris. And that is it from Courtside Conversations. Thank you for your company. When we return, we will be saying goodbye to the clay and hello to the grass. So until next time, bye for now.
Bye.